There's a visitor today in the Norwegian capital of Oslo, a Dutchman who works in Geneva. His name is Dr. Van Hoven Gerthardt. A few hours ago, the Norwegian government awarded him the Nobel Peace Prize for the work his office has done and continues to do to remove for all time one of the most bitter legacies of war and political upheaval.
Seven years ago today, the General Assembly of the United Nations proclaimed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which recognizes that the inherent dignity and inalienable rights of all men are the foundations of freedom, justice, and peace in the world. To mark the occasion, United Nations Radio and CBS Radio present Joseph Schildkraut in The Disinherited. This is the transcribed story of the thousands who are the special care of Dr. Van Hoven Gerthardt, the High Commissioner for Refugees. The thousands who strive to preserve their dignity while their inalienable rights are denied.
This singer you're listening to, she has a history. There was a time when audiences in one of Europe's great opera houses applauded her. You can tell why from the quality of her voice. But did you notice the accompaniment, the off-key piano? As I said, there was a time. She has not been inside an opera house for some years. Nobody applauded her after that song just now. She sang it and we recorded it in a tiny room with a concrete floor in a refugee camp in Trieste. She lives there as a refugee.
The essential quality of a refugee,
says Sir John Hope Simpson in his book The Refugee Problem,
is that he has sought refuge in a territory other than that in which he was formerly resident, as a result of political events which render his continued residence in his former territory impossible or intolerable.
That is the classic definition. A definition cannot describe the human overtones. What are the human overtones? What is it like after you've sought refuge in a territory other than that in which you formerly resided? It could be fine. Sometimes it is. Some, a few, are lucky. But for most, for thousands and thousands, it means a long, slow process of waiting. Of waiting in a camp for a piece of paper, a visa, which means you can move on to a new, productive life. And what is a camp like? Does the word suggest a weekend with the Boy Scouts? Neat little white tents under the trees with hot chestnuts and sing songs round the fire at night? Listen to Stanley Wright, Special Assistant to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. He is speaking from one of Europe's 200 camps, Kolokintu, Athens, Greece.
The crying of the children, the quarreling of the people, the singing of a woman, the shouting of a man, the playing of a radio. These noises are noises everyone hears in Kolokintu. They are multiplied and echoed by all the walls. In these subdivisions, call them rooms if you like, families live, sleep, cook, wash, quarrel, love. Nearly 100 people to one hall.
Now let's move from the general to the particular. Let's move from the hall itself through one of the canvas and blanket walls into a cubicle, into the dim, noisy space which two people are obliged to call home. Stanley Wright is sitting there.
There are two beds in it, that is to say mattresses with some coverings on it. There is an oil lamp on a very small table. There is a commode with a clock. There is a roof. The roof is made of blankets, old blankets, worn out blankets, supported by pieces of wood held together by string. This, then, is the home of people. Two people, two human beings. What are their ages? What are their names? What is their history? I will ask them. What is your name?
My name is Athena. I'm Gerino, from Romania, refugee from Romania.
How long have you been living here?
I am living here about 5 years, more than 5 years. In June was 5 years.
And what do you do for your living?
For our living, the government give us 5 drachms a day. 5 drachms, yes. And 5, my sister. I try hard to get a lesson, to teach French or English, whatever I can do. Because I am old now and cannot have a job. More than 6. My sister is a little cripple, cannot hear very well, cannot earn her own living, you know.
How do you live on 10 drachma a day?
Well, 5 drachms a day is oil for the lamp.
5 drachma for the oil.
To warm ourselves, to light ourselves, and to cook.
What did you have to eat today?
Today we had a little pilaf, you know, what is this, rice, yes, from America. So we had rice.
And now move outside into the campgrounds. Ask any of those you see how their plans are getting on or when they expect to move on, to emigrate to a new land, Canada, America, Australia, Brazil.
I haven't got my visa yet, but I'm waiting for it.
Waiting for it. How long have you been waiting for your visa?
Well, I've been waiting here for about 4 years.
4 years. And what makes you think that your visa will be coming soon?
Well, that's a hope. Everybody's waiting so long for it.
They wait. 4, 5, 7, 10 years. They wait for a visa, a piece of paper. That means there's someone in a foreign land willing to sponsor them, that there'll be work and a home for them, and that they can leave the overcrowded, demoralizing conditions in the old barracks or abandoned factories or unwanted army huts called camps. And while they wait, what can they do? Get sporadic and unrewarding jobs in the vicinity of the camp, washing dishes, perhaps, or giving lessons like Athena Hungarinov? But what about the hours of darkness when despair swells up inside like a choking fog? If you play the piano like Miss Kvaskova of San Saba Camp Trieste, you can pour out your dread of the future on the untuned strings. Or you can try to read or study a new language for the new life which you hope lies somewhere ahead. Spanish, French, Italian, English.
I like blau carpet.
Blue
carpet.
You like blue. All right, now we have a sitting room with a blue carpet and white curtains.
Yes. It's difficult sometimes to keep hoping after you've sought refuge in a territory other than that in which you formerly resided. The slow erosion of passing time is probably the greatest obstacle, but it's certainly not the only one. The rules of immigration are demanding things. You may not have the required skills. You may be too old at 45. You may just be ill here. Here's a case history, one of many, related by Mrs. Coe, a representative of the World Council of Churches in Trieste.
Well, there's one couple who've been dogged by bad luck ever since they came to Trieste in 1950. There was a man called Kalinowski Constantine and his wife Milena. And they came to Trieste in order to emigrate as soon as possible. They went up for a Brazilian mass mission scheme and were rejected because it was discovered that the wife had TB. Later on, they went up again for a Chilean mass migration and were rejected. Again a year later for Norway. Then finally, when the wife became better, we managed to get them a visa for Brazil. But unfortunately, the consul discovered that the wife had had TB and refused to accept her. An appeal was made and finally a visa was again produced, which was lost. And by the time it was found and sent to Trieste, the wife was pregnant and unfortunately could not be accepted till after the baby was born. The baby was stillborn in November, and as a result, the mother again contracted TB and could not possibly go to Brazil.
These are some of the human overtones, the flesh which coats the dry bones of the definition. We've tried to set the scene as it is now, today, 10 years after the first of the refugees were forced to take flight. As the UN High Commissioner, Dr. Van Hoeven Goethart himself, says...
There are in Europe about 200 of those ghastly places called refugee camps, and I would like my executive committee to have one of its sessions in one of those camps, because I feel sure that if you would see the mud and the dirt and the gloom of those places, everybody would feel in the same hurry as I do to close them down altogether. Conditions are so appalling that we must feel ashamed of ourselves that 10 years after the end of the World War, there are still 75,000 people living under those circumstances.
And of these people themselves, who must live hopefully if they can, Dr. Goethart has this to add.
It requires quite some amount of courage to become a refugee. The decision to leave everything you had behind you and walk into a completely uncertain future is such as to make a refugee in principle someone who deserves more our admiration and our charity. And it also, I think, indicates that the average refugee will be a man of some moral courage, a man with some character which really is worthwhile and who would easily become an asset to a country where he would be given an opportunity to live. Of course, when you have been hanging around in a camp for years, you are liable to have lost quite a bit of your self-confidence and whatnot. But the experience shows that as soon as you give those people a real chance, they take it with both their hands.
So, what is being done to provide a real chance? The answer, fortunately, is a great deal. By the High Commissioner's Office, by non-governmental organizations, and by individuals in many countries who have responded to the challenge spontaneously, not just with sympathy, no, but with active, practical work. Individuals like Madame Ariane de Berg of Belgium.
When I first heard the High Commissioner for Refugees speak about the misery of the camps where people lived in such conditions which no human beings ever ought to know, I felt that it was the sacred duty of every one of us belonging to the human family to help them out of these conditions at all cost. Think of the way the people have to live. Think of the idleness, the helplessness, the despair, and the ensuing revolt spreading among young and old as inevitably and as rapidly as tuberculosis. Think of the unwashed, uneducated children, some of them unable even to go to school for lack of decent clothes and shoes.
Madame de Berg thought about these things and talked to her friends about them. The result was what she describes as a snowball campaign to adopt camps in Europe to provide not only food and clothing and toys for children, but tools of trade to help reestablish the father of a family and other forms of aid designed not just to relieve distress, but to remove it permanently. Since she started, she and her friends have been joined by other individuals and organizations, and the snowball is now so big that over 40 of the 200 camps in Europe have been adopted. But it's still not enough. As Madame de Berg says...
Come along, all of you who hear me. The snowballs can be thrown at everybody, rich and poor, young and old, all over the world. Everybody is needed with their love, their talent, their imagination, their human solidarity, and their enthusiasm. Let us unite over land and water in a common action for humanity, which will bring us close together so that this action for just a little portion of our fellow beings will also help to bring about this longed-for world peace each of us prays for in his heart of hearts.
The solution of the refugee problem can make a contribution to world peace. This was recognized last November the 3rd when the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to the office of the United Nations High Commissioner for the ceaseless effort it is making to find a permanent solution. To give you an idea of the sort of effort being made, here is Dr. Elvin Rees of the World Council of Churches, a man who knows much of the tragedy of the refugees and of the work being done to help them.
There is now a four-year plan of the High Commissioner, a plan which will involve the expenditure of some $16 million in that period, and which it is hoped will solve the problem of most of the refugees in the camps and of some other especially needy refugees outside the camps. The High Commissioner's report shows that this program has been launched and is underway, but it also shows that it's already in jeopardy for lack of financial support from the governments concerned.
How does the plan operate? High Commissioner Van Hoeven Goethart gives a practical illustration.
There's a man, let's take a peasant, a farmer, who came from Romania and who finds himself now, let's assume, in Austria. What that man wants is to become a farmer and stand on his own feet. In order to do that, we must rent him a farm. We must give him cattle and seed and tools and whatnot, and even a little money to keep going until the first harvest. All that can be given to that man in the form of a credit, and he'll certainly be glad to pay back as soon as he can. However, that credit is not available, and one of the major projects under the program which we are going to carry out is, therefore, to provide any refugee who is in that category with the necessary credit in order to make it possible for him to re-establish himself in the economy of the country where he is now. Austria is at present importing part of its foodstuffs, and at the same time there are 4,000 abandoned farms. So what would be better than to establish 4,000 farmer refugees on 4,000 farms, increase the production of foodstuffs in Austria, make it unnecessary for Austria to import as much as they do now? It would certainly be an asset to the country, as refugees normally are. That's forgotten, you see. People always think that refugees are people to have sympathy with and so on and so forth, but they are much more deserving our admiration than anything else.
A few weeks ago, Dr. Goethart reported to the General Assembly of the United Nations on the progress of this plan and on all the other efforts of his office. There are the legal aspects of the problem, the status of the refugee, the obstacles to admission in the countries of resettlement, the rights of the refugees in their countries of residence, the right to work, to social security, naturalization. There are the many pressing calls for emergency assistance, for help to the old and the infirm. There are the difficult cases for whom there seems to be no future. And there are the schemes to help the refugee find a place in the life of the country where he now finds himself. Dr. Rees recalls a remark which Dr. Goethart made in his report to the Assembly.
At the end of the debate, the High Commissioner recalled an occasion when in Greece he asked a refugee what was his dearest desire, and was given the very moving and very simple answer, "Give me a key to a door." And that phrase has become the motto, almost, of the debate this time. It seems to me that that wasn't quite enough. The concept of a key to a door as a solution to a refugee's problem is wonderful. But before that key can be put into his hand, other keys have to be found. It is quite clear we must find the key to the treasuries of governments so that money is available. It is quite clear we must find the key to ports of entry in countries of immigration so that the resettlement program can play its part. And perhaps last of all and most of all, we still have to find the key to the hearts of men so that human sympathy for these tragic victims of the convulsions of the post-war years may be moved and will, in its own way, help them to new lives.
I am here in Trieste 4.5 years. I'm here for a year.
I would like to continue my education, but I don't know. Do I have opportunity to do it?
I haven't got my visa yet, but I'm waiting for it.
Hard work is nothing that we could fear of, and we have to take care of our future.
I've done everything to go to America.
Yes. Though many have been resettled overseas or absorbed in the life of their land of refuge, many, many more still wait. So the end is not yet in sight. The work must go on by the Office of the High Commissioner, by the voluntary organizations, and by individuals. In Oslo today, Dr. Van Hoeven Goethardt accepted the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of his office, and this is what he said.
Peace, as has been rightly described in various ways, is much more than just absence of war. It is rather a state in which no people of any country, in fact no group of people of any kind, live in fear or in need. Real peace is therefore an ideal to be pursued by mankind relentlessly and with unflagging perseverance, although it may not be an ideal which mankind can ever realize to the full extent. We are therefore deeply grateful for the encouragement given to our office through the award of the Nobel Peace Prize, encouragement which we hope will also affect the governments themselves.
And what has all this to do with today, Human Rights Day 1955, the 7th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? There's a close connection between that declaration and the fate of a refugee. For the inherent dignity of a man begins to crack after years of dispossession. Inalienable rights begin to wear thin. Freedom, justice, and peace become rather remote. But there's no need here to speak in generalities. There are articles in the Universal Declaration quite specific on the matter at issue. Article 13.
Everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state. And everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to his country.
Article 14.
Everyone has the right to seek and to enjoy in other countries asylum from persecution.
Article 23.
Everyone has the right to work, to free choice of employment, to just and favorable conditions of work, and to protection against unemployment.
Thousands upon thousands in Europe today and more still beyond do not enjoy the benefits of Articles 13, 14, and 23. But mercifully, when rights are denied, it is in the nature of man to react with determination to restore them. The award of the Nobel Peace Prize to the High Commissioner's office is proof. But it is also in the nature of events that restoration takes time. So may we conclude with a memorandum from Stanley Wright speaking from Geneva.
If all the doors were wide open for all the good, honest, hard-working, freedom-loving people, how easily the problem could be solved and an end put to the long waiting of the refugees in the camps. But the doors are not wide open.
Joseph Schildkraut, currently starring in the Broadway production The Diary of Anne Frank, was just heard as the narrator in The Disinherited, a transcribed program commemorating the 7th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, proclaimed on the 10th of December, 1948. The Disinherited was produced by United Nations Radio and was a CBS public affairs program. Oh.